You're at the AdamStatMiller.com podcast. This is part two of an amazing interview with Professor Austin Choi Fitzpatrick from the USD, this is a mouthful, Kroc Peace Studies Center or something of that nature. I'm sure if you Google it, you'll be able to find it online pretty easy. We're talking about social movements. We're talking about social justice. We're talking about evangelicalism. We're going to get into that and how social movements are created and happen. Before we do that, let's talk on some definitions. I used the term social justice earlier. I spoke about my brother who works for a Vicentian charity, runs a Vicentian charity in London, working with impoverished, a lot of Afro-Caribbean students that get pregnant. They come in, they have an apartment. They come in, teach them how to, you know, change their baby, teach them how to do financial skills. They actually bring them into this apartment in the heart of London, send them out. I believe that's a justice movement because it's bringing equality to society. They have more chance. It puts more coins on the one side of the scale to bring a balance to it. You said you don't see those type of works as justice. Explain the difference between justice and what you called, well, I'll let you say what it is. What's the differentiation?
Yeah, so I think that sort of work is absolutely necessary, absolutely important, and absolutely commendable, and is the sort of commitment that your brother has to the work that he does that I would aspire to with my own life, right?
Right.
I think those are fundamentally, though, acts of charity. The idea being that they are helping people to do to make the best of the situation that they find themselves in. Justice, however, is different.
It's you said changed. Mercy, but you
mercy.
Said
what
you said
I,
no, no.
Yeah,
but you
charity,
said charity,
mercy. Well, yeah, no, justice versus. Okay, so we'll say justice and mercy, right?
Yeah.
Do you want to do this over?
No, I'm good. I think that's.
I can justice.
No,
and
that's
mercy.
Good because it's a the entire culture right now is based on storytelling and there's words. You know, for right now, I heard a new word for kind of the fight for gender. They use the word gender integrity, the importance of knowing what gender you are and being able to you're stuck with the gender that you're biologically born with. But biological gender didn't work as well as gender integrity. It's a better word. I like charity. Charity isn't a strong word anymore because no one wants to be a charity case. But you did use the word mercy, and that ties in to the Isaiah, I think it's Isaiah, where it says, you know, justice and mercy. I could be wrong.
Flow down like rivers.
Yeah, but flow down like rivers. So talk about talk about those words, the difference between you see charity, mercy.
So I think I'm arguing that mercy and charity are regardless of this sort of how they're used in the scripture, and also the fact that charity may be getting a bad rap, which you're right. Nobody has charity shops anymore. Except, I guess, in England. But the point being that one is an approach that actually meets the person where they are with the needs that they have. And justice actually asks, why does this person have those needs? And why is this person where they are? And starts to ask more structural questions about inequality, more structural questions about poverty, more structural questions about injustice. So it's absolutely necessary to have people who are doing work around the immediate needs of people who have found themselves at the sort of bottom end of a social hierarchy. Justice asks, why is there a social hierarchy? And why do certain people consistently, year after year, generation after generation, or in particular social patterns, find themselves at that end of a system of inequality? That's a justice question.
Got it. So today,
today
on NPR, they were saying that the average age of someone who lives in Beverly Hills will be 83. The average age of someone who lives in Compton will be 77. 6 years difference. You're saying that mercy and charity would teach those people how to eat better, and justice would go to the social structures of why the government hasn't gotten clean water to their air, not that they don't have clean water or whatever, but the social systems of why they've stayed in this poverty rat race.
Exactly. What are the ways in which society actually creates those infrastructures? So you said the reasons they stay in, and I would say we create structures that actually pattern behavior and actually pattern the sorts of options that people have, such that we see these kinds of. This is one sort of one statistic, and almost all statistics follow this pattern: rates of incarceration,
right?
Rates of obesity, rates of distance from healthy foods, food deserts. All of these major indices map onto social and economic inequality. So justice asks, how do we strike at the root of these larger forms of inequality, rather than how do we help people ease in their transition from one state of desperation to slightly less.
So it's higher up on the food chain. If you so justice would be higher up on, or let's, I mean, the food chain would be the right word, but
In terms of causality.
Causality, you need to have both, because justice needs to have the charity work to go behind it to implement it, doesn't it? Or if you take care of justice, does charity not need to happen because it's been fixed?
We must have both, but we can't confuse one for the other.
Got it. We must have both, but we can't confuse.
So we should have so mercy, absolutely. Does mercy go away if we have justice? Perhaps in some fantasy world that we both hope we eventually live in, but is certainly
utopian.
Not on the horizon,
yeah.
Right? So absolutely we need both. The question isn't whether or not the act of feeding the homeless is important. The question is, why is the commitment there and not also to, so it's not instead of, but a together with, asking why it is that we have systems that don't create higher levels of employment, or why it is we have systems that ask people who don't have enough money for housing to live on the streets.
I'm Joe Plummer. Where do I put my time? That's overwhelming to me. I'm Joe Plummer. What? Tell me how Tracy House Mom is. I mean, where do they? That's overwhelming. What should I do? What would be your answer? I'm coming up to you as a not as a pastor, as somebody who just wants to change the world. I don't know how to do it. What do I do, Austin?
Evangelical pastors have done a good job telling the story that all you have to do is donate some of your time to a food bank. And so in a lot of ways, the difficulty of answering that story or telling a story that ties in with the needs of the hearer and the time available to all of us, myself included, right? That story is easier to tell on the mercy end. Donate some spare clothes. Donate, give.
And I go home and I feel good.
And people go home and they feel good.
Which is fine.
There's nothing wrong with that process. The question is whether or not leaders are challenging people and people are challenging themselves to actually also ask questions about how they can participate in seeing justice come about and not just committing themselves to mercy.
So two illustrations coming out of our church. One, I was really challenged because we really want to have a multi-ethnic congregation. And I think we're getting there, and we have speckled faces, especially Brazilians in our church, because PB, and especially at UCSD, and La Jolla, where we are, is probably the most racially diverse city in all of San Diego. There might be some poor areas down in the, but I would say that those would be broken up into like your Vietnamese community, your African American community. But in La Jolla, when I go to Trader Joe's with all the UCSD students and everything, I just notice that there happens to be a huge. It feels like I'm in London when I'm going shopping. I hear all these different languages. I can go home happy because I have a smattering of brown and different color faces in my church. But I read an article recently that said, until those brown, black, Korean, whatever ethnicity, not to use the colors, make their way to the elder board, where they are making decisions for the church based on where they came from with their story, then you're not multi-ethnic. And so one of the things I'm pushing for is I'm actively seeking right now to get someone of color on our all-white elder board. Now, our head elder is a woman, which is another conversation for another day. But I really want to have people of color that are helping make decisions, because I understand, like I said in my last interview with Christine Gard of Could You, that I have no context. I'm so from white privilege, I don't even know I'm from white privilege. And what I meant by that is when I was in elementary school growing up, I didn't understand that there was any race differences. I just didn't. I mean, it was an all-white school for the most part. We had one girl from Hawaii that was Asian and three black kids, 500 kids.
In order to address large and systemic issues, we need large and systemic solutions. And those are never easy. And you're rightly pointing out, how is it that individuals in the sort of narrow amounts of time seize that sort of vision, right?
Right.
And then find any way to apply it. And that's a great, an abiding question. And that's a question that I have as a person born in privilege and living in privilege, right? That's a question that I have for myself as well, right? So this is, I'm very much with you in the question. But I think that the answer ultimately comes down to a combination of how we spend our money, how we use our time, and how
right.
we use our votes. And so we won't get into politics because I think that
no, I don't mind a little bit. We can have an appetizer.
So, and I think that these things end up coming down to how it is and what individuals see as justice. And so, I mean, I'm holding that off for a moment. So I'm talking about radical inequality and the sort of radical inequality that this country has bred as a form of injustice. But I think there are people who are committed, deeply committed to justice, who see things differently than I do when it comes to politics, let's say, or to how we get toward a less unjust society.
One question for you. I struggle when churches make something besides Jesus and his glory be the main thing. And so we have churches that are, they're an Israel church, or they're a prophecy church, or they're a healing church, or they're the social justice church. And they have these things, and we tend to fix our eyes on something other than what Hebrews says is the author and perfecter of our faith. And we get off on these agendas. How would a church, if you were an evangelical pastor, how would you do that without just, in the end, creating a soup mission and a political back end to try to change those systems? Is that what you would use it for? Do you think that's the highest calling of the church, to bring equality to the world? Or how would you get this message? Because this message needs to get out. We need to make a difference. And as pastors listening to this, as leaders, we need a tool to make these things happen, but by keeping the main focus on Jesus, if that makes sense. Or can we do that? Does that make sense? Am I asking a question correctly?
Yeah, no, yeah, but this, I guess you're asking a non-believing non-pastor to imagine that there are particular kind of believing pastor and then think of what to do. That's, you guys have tough jobs.
You grew up believing.
Yeah, I grew up in
New York. You can't put yourself back into that mindset?
Well, but you all have tough jobs, right? Which is that you all are challenged to do a number of very important bureaucratic tasks with excellence and with accountability and transparency, right?
We're called to that, but very few do it.
Okay, well, that's time for a different podcast, right?
Yeah.
Episode 7, yeah. Transparency and accountability. Can we do it with integrity? So, but this challenge of both the administrative end of things and doing that in a way that's transparent and accountable and leaves people feeling like it's transparent and accountable,
right.
and the process of actually exercising leadership, the process of exercising sort of self-care and accountability in you all's own lives as leaders.
Right.
These are a tremendous series of tasks to be entrusted with. I don't actually think I believe in the pastoral model of ministry. So if I were a believer, I would say that I don't believe in the system as it stands.
All right, so hang on for a second. Yeah. This is the Adam Stattmiller podcast. We're going to come back with Professor Austin Choi Fitzpatrick on why pastors shouldn't exist. No, I'm just kidding. We'll be back in just a moment.